Coming up next on The Social Hour, Twitter changes its block protocol and then changes it back because everybody's really upset. Plus, who's the best tech company to work for? And what are the most popular YouTube videos of 2013? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 140, like Twitter, recorded Friday, December 13th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour at sap.com/twit. And by audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another fun-filled edition of The Social Hour from a sort of dreary and pretty cold afternoon up at Twit headquarters in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and it is a little dreary here as well. We're expecting a snowstorm that's supposed to come through this weekend, maybe dump as much as 15 centimeters, at least on the city of Toronto, probably more north of the city. So it's going to be interesting. But Sarah, I have to tell you that by next week, I will be in Florida. So just saying, not worried about it.
The annual migration. MacArthur migration to sunnier pastures. Yeah, you know, you and I were both in Florida around the same time last year. So it's a small little price to pay for warmth and sunshine and blue water.
Yes, it's all good. I'm excited. But I do, you know, the first snowfall, there's something kind of magical about it. I think especially for kids, you know, they get to go out sledding. And then by January, you're kind of over it. But leading up into the Christmas season, I think it's okay to have a bit of snow. So it's not too bad. So that is the weather here. But of course, Sarah, lots to talk about on the social media front. And the biggest story, and I'm sure everybody saw this, was all about Twitter and its blocking backlash and how they decided to implement a new way of blocking people. And then, of course, there was a backlash from a lot of people on Twitter. I think Matthew Ingram also wrote a blog post over at GigaOm talking about why it was a bad idea. And they very quickly reverted the changes.
Yeah, which is somewhat, you know, it's not the first time we've had a company say, okay, we may have jumped the gun here. The users have spoken. But yeah, the idea is, and Amber, I should point out, by the way, that our first couple stories are all Twitter-based, and our show happens to be episode 140. So just a little bit of a coinky-dink there.
Magical.
I know. And Twitter just, you know, they sort of provided us all this information, so we didn't have to really even try that hard to make the connection. Yeah, so yesterday, gosh, it was like 24 hours ago, Twitter changes its blocking policy to, let's say, okay, so you and I are following each other. Somehow, I don't know, our friendship goes sour. I don't want you to be able to have access to me anymore, so I block you. Well, blocking doesn't really keep you from seeing what my activity is like. If you sign out of Twitter and go to twitter.com/Sarah Lane, you'd be able to see everything that I'm tweeting. The only way for me to truly be private would be to make my entire account private, which means that only people that I've allowed following privileges can see what I have to say. Okay, well, that's the way that it has worked. And then yesterday, Twitter made a change that if I block you, you still are able to look at my profile without having to sign out and then kind of like be anonymous. And that confused a lot of people, sort of upset a lot of people, especially people who have said, I've been harassed before on Twitter. I don't like the idea. Yes, sure, you can always get around certain features, but this just means that if I block somebody, they go on with their lives as if nothing has happened. And it sounds like Twitter thought, well, but don't you anger somebody a little bit more if then they see that you've blocked them? Because then they'll know that they have to sign out in order to get access to you. And Amber, I don't know how you feel about it. I mean, I don't know that I need to be that passive aggressive when I block somebody so that they have absolutely no idea that I've done so. But I also don't really ever feel like blocking did much anyway.
Yeah, I think the blocking feature is something for me that I've never really used it. I mean, maybe once or twice, but at the end of the day, I just felt like, and I agree with how Twitter has done it for a long time, where, and one of the reasons that they did change it was that people were notified that you did block them. And I do think in a lot of cases that does cause more problems. It makes people angrier. They don't like the fact that you blocked them. Yeah. So it's one of those things where I don't know, I'm kind of on the fence with this one, but I do think for people who are harassed, it's a huge issue. And clearly people did not like the way that Twitter had dealt with this and didn't like the idea that you couldn't be a little more aggressive with your blocking, because that's the previous way of doing it, which obviously it's reverted, so it's back that way. It allowed you to really almost make a statement, I think, by blocking someone and just to say, you know what, I don't want anything to do with you in my Twitter life, and that's the end of that. Whereas the change they tried to implement, it was, like you said, a little more passive.
Yeah, definitely a little bit more passive. I think there's a larger issue with what does blocking do anyway? I mean, really, I block people pretty liberally. You know, somebody will say something that's disparaging, or, you know, I kind of go like, oh, gosh, that didn't make me feel very good. I just need to block this person, because then they won't show up in my at replies the next time they say something, you know, that's going to ruin my day. That actually works really well, because you just forget that that person exists, and you don't see them again, and they're not sort of inserting themselves into your timeline. But for a long time, I thought blocking somebody meant, yeah, you don't get to see anything that I'm doing. It's as if I don't exist on Twitter. And that isn't true at all. You block somebody and you bump them from following you, but they can they can't actually follow you while they're blocked, but they still can visit your profile. And I think a lot of people should understand that you're not invisible if you've blocked somebody, not at all. Even with Twitter reversing its decision, I think it's great that it happened so quickly, especially because there are a lot of vocal people who say, listen, there have been people that, it's not just about, oh, somebody said something mean about me and it hurt my feelings, but I have actually felt unsafe. And to do anything that seems to step away from letting people know that they've done something wrong and they're being some sort of a message is not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah, and I think there are probably people who are going to email us and tell us specific scenarios where they wanted to use the blocking feature, because I think it's almost like a case-by-case issue for a lot of people. Like, yeah. Even though I say that, you know what, I've never had to use it, I'm just imagining there are people out there who might be listening who think, oh, I've had to use it because of this specific situation. So it really almost is an individual choice, and it seems like people were kind of, you know, half and half as far as the way that they liked how Twitter was proceeding with this blocking feature. So if you want to read more about that, I know, like I mentioned, Matthew Ingram has written quite a bit about it was in favor of them reverting back to the way that they've done things now.
Yeah. Well, it's Twitter's making so many changes. I mean, they've, you know, you're able to send people pictures and direct messages now. They're screwing around with some blocking features. There's all sorts of stuff going on in the Twitter world. So I would like to see some sort of a blocking feature somehow be magically better than it is now. I'm not going to privatize my account. I mean, my Twitter account is public, and for the most part, I love interacting with people, but it would be nice to be able to have some sort of peace of mind that when you block somebody, you cease to exist in their Twitter life as well as them from yours. Mm. And, you know, that would make me feel better.
The thing is, it's so hard to do on Twitter because it's such a public platform, right? Out of all of the social networks, I would argue that this one is the most public. It almost works best when people are more public with their feeds. I know very few people who use it in a private way. So it's a tricky one, because I think at the end of the day, Twitter just is such an open platform that it becomes an issue when people do try to have more private conversations. So we'll see what happens with them. I know people are going to email us and let us know what they prefer and maybe why, without going into too many details.
Even in the chat room right now, for those of you who are following along to the show live, a lot of responses. QNX Monkey says, I don't get the point of blocking or even muting somebody unless it's spam. Christmas says, I like how Google and YouTube block people. They don't know they're blocked. Chaos Star 13 says, I just block spammers. I don't really care otherwise. I think, yeah, again, it really depends on who your community is. Do you have people who constantly, you know, bring down some sense of positivity in your Twitter experience? for many of you, you might say, yeah, you know, I report a spam every once in a while and everybody else is really nice. I wish I could say that about all the people that I interact with on Twitter. But again, yeah, case by case basis.
Definitely. And interestingly, you have a story here about Twitter being one of the best tech companies to work at. It's quite a long list, but Twitter, for the first time ever, has made it to the top of this list. So trailing them is LinkedIn as well as Facebook. And it looks like Facebook used to be at the top of this list for a few years. And now Twitter has overtaken them.
Yeah, Twitter is the number one tech company to work for. So says career website Glassdoor. They do an annual Employees' Choice Awards. This is the sixth annual, and it's a list of the 50 best places to work for in the coming year. So it's kind of like, as it stands now, Twitter is the best place to work. And again, these are tech-focused companies. Facebook was in first place last year. It's gone down to number three, and LinkedIn is right there in the number two spot. With really a rating that's basically the same as Twitter's, negligible. And the 50 best places to work aren't necessarily tech companies. However, 22 were tech companies. So it's a little bit of a... tech companies seem to be a pretty good place to work for. And also, of those places, who's the best? You know, I don't know much about what it would be like to be an employee at Twitter, Amber. I mean, I obviously it's a pretty big company. They have a lot of employees. Their headquarters are right down the street from where I live right now, and it's a beautiful building. But I wonder what are all the perks? You know, I want to hear about it. I know that they've got sort of fancy lunches and all sorts of activities and this beautiful building and and Brian's doing a little on the fly hacking. To accurately reflect what should have been number one. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know us and our Michelin-starred chef lunches here at Twit. Woo! We kind of used to have that a long time ago. But I don't know. What do you think it is about Twitter? Or is it just because it's a fun product and therefore fun place to be part of?
I do think it's kind of interesting because we know so much about other tech companies out there, like Google, as far as what it's like to work there. I mean, look at all the coverage that Google's had over the past few years. I mean, there's even a movie out, The Internship. I don't know if you saw that, Sarah.
I didn't, but I know the movie. I know which one you're talking about.
So we're just inundated with all of these images of what it's like to work at Google. So yeah, I never really think about what it's like to work at Twitter. I mean, it seems like it's obviously a great place to work. And because it's such a popular service, I'm guessing, you know, people are just pretty happy if they have a job there right now. So it will all depend, though, Sarah, on our next story, because we talk about this all the time with Twitter. What are they going to do about advertising, and how are they going to be able to continue to figure out ways to monetize on the platform? And it looks like they keep coming up with some interesting ideas. They're kind of tweaking things here and there, and this is one great example of that.
Yeah, it is. And this actually really ties into our guest last week, Gary Vaynerchuk. He made some really good points about if you're trying to get people to pay attention to you on Twitter. Let's say you've got something to promote. You wrote a new book, you've got a new blog post or a new product, or you're going to be speaking somewhere, whatever it is. It's really hard to get people to, you know, to pay attention to your tweet, click on a link that you may have added. I certainly feel that way. And one of his points of advice was, see what's trending. See what else people are talking about, and see if there's some sort of a hook where you can say, oh, if you liked that basketball game, you're going to love my basketball-themed whatever. I'm making up an example that doesn't exist, but that was a really, really good tip. What Twitter is doing is kind of allowing advertisers to piggyback on trending topics as well. Not necessarily trending specifically, as in Twitter's trending topics, but they use an example. The Next Web has a nice little example that they write up. It says, for example, if somebody says something like, oh, I love coffee. Well, the fact that you love coffee, the word love and the word coffee might be two keywords that an advertiser might want to know about, because maybe they'd like to insert promoted ads to people that have already shown that they're coffee drinkers. Well, but this is Twitter, right? So what if L-U-V is the way that you spell love because you're, I don't know, saving a character or being leet speak or whatever? that advertiser then can have a list of words that say, okay, you know, this is kind of the broad term of people that I would like to target. And Twitter is allowing companies to have, certain keywords, related search terms, synonyms for a particular word, words that are misspelled not on purpose, but are definitely conveying the same message, and slang words that, you know, mean coffee. I don't know, you said Java or whatever else people call coffee. Amber, you know, the whole idea about getting targeted tweets is... You know, it's not for everybody. Twitter says this doesn't mean if for whatever reason a coffee company targets me as a coffee drinker, it doesn't mean I'm going to see any more ads than I would normally. It just means that those will be more targeted towards me based on what I've already said. But of course, the idea of ads being smart because they know what you're saying rubs people the wrong way. I don't ever see any promoted tweets because I use a third-party Twitter app. So sometimes I feel like I'm outside the conversation on this. Do promoted tweets bother you?
I'm not really bothered by them too much. I mean, I just don't think they're that intrusive in many ways. And I think from an advertiser standpoint, this is a really smart thing. As they mentioned in the article, this is something that happens on other social networks. But I would argue it's probably most important on Twitter because so many people are, in fact, trying to shorten words all the time, right? I mean, you may just write something like love and LUV because you just don't have enough characters left. So it makes perfect sense for them to really lead on this and to continue to do this because I think so often people are just trying to figure out how to fit in 140 characters and it's not that easy all the time. So I think broad match makes a ton of sense. I don't know if it's such a big change with how Twitter's doing advertising that it's going to make the difference as far as major revenue. But I think at the end of the day, again, I go back to these kind of little tweaks that they're doing with their advertisers. And I think this is a good one. Like I said, particularly on Twitter.
I think so too. I think if ads are going to be successful on Twitter and Twitter needs them to be successful because Twitter is now a public company, which is probably part of the reason that employees like working there so much because a lot of people made a lot of money over the last month or so. But why not see an ad that actually that targets you effectively? You know, I'd rather see something, an ad for something that I'm a little bit more interested in than something that is just completely out of left field and feels more intrusive. I know not everybody feels that way. Some people feel like, and this is a conversation we've had about Facebook in the past, if an ad is targeted towards me, and especially if, I don't know, it's not necessarily marked so well that it kind of becomes manipulative because it seems like less of an ad, I can see that side of the argument as well, but I think I like what Twitter's doing here.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a good move. And you're right, that's a great chart. The way they describe it in that article is perfect. It makes great sense for anyone who wants to check it out, and we'll put a link in our show notes. Now, Sarah, this is another interesting article. What does this say about people? The top 10 videos of 2013 from YouTube, quite a varied list of different videos that made the cut, everything from Miley Cyrus's Wrecking Ball to the Volvo truck, the epic split.
Right.
And the list goes on and on.
You know, it's weird. At first, I was like, Harlem Shake, wasn't that so last year? But, you know, these things tend to spill over. And, of course, we're in December, so January might have been a really, really big month for Harlem Shake. There you go. Of course, the NFL bad lip reading, I'm aware of that. Again, I was like, that's not from 2013, but sure it was because we all watched it before the Super Bowl, which was last, January, last week of January. And then, of course, what does the Fox say, which I never really liked all that much. But, you know, that's a big one. Definitely. It was the top trending video. Psy, who is famous for, what was that first video called? No, I don't even remember.
Gangnam Style.
Yeah. He had a new video that was the top trending music video of the year.
Never even seen that.
I haven't either. I think I'm almost more surprised, Amber, that some of these videos, I probably would know a lot of them if I watched a few seconds of the video, but I don't know them by name.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know the Lonely Island's YOLO video. Maybe I've seen it, but I don't remember seeing it.
You know, it's funny. I mean, you could almost look at this list, and I think so many of these are almost like repeat videos. And what I mean by that is think about Evian as a brand and think about their original video where they had all those babies roller skating or rollerblading. That was from a few years ago. Then you have Lonely Island, which had a big hit a few years ago as well. I mean, it just seems like not a whole lot has changed as far as the top 10 list to what really makes it on YouTube. And for the most part, that it's kind of comedy as well as music videos and, of course, spoofs of certain things.
Sure. Yeah. And we're actually looking at the YouTube sort of year in review that stars a lot of YouTube stars, which, I mean, I recognize a lot of these people. And I don't even know why, because I don't even really watch that many YouTube series. But it's very interesting what ends up making it to the top. I mean, some of it is super high production value, so that's a part of it. What does the Fox say? Whether or not you like the song, I mean, it's very well done. Mm-hmm. And that's I don't know who paid for that, but it's that they put a lot of effort into it. But you never know. Mozart versus Skrillex. I wouldn't have thought, Amber.
I'm always amazed, though, Sarah, by the numbers, right? And we're going to talk about a video later on from WestJet, and I think they've reached almost 20 million views in just a couple of days. But the numbers always surprise me and amaze me because they're just so high. And then I also think of this whole YouTube culture, which I think we mentioned before on the show. I feel like I missed the boat entirely on that. Just the whole, there are all of these personalities on YouTube who've built up massive followings, and they literally are getting millions of views. Not weekly, but it's quite frequent.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's ridiculous. It's crazy. We will talk about that a little bit later in the show. You know, we wanted to just touch on before we move on to round out our news is a little bit of it's almost non-news from Facebook. It's a little bit strange. This comes from Mashable. Although I believe the original story came from Mike Isaac over at All Things D. But earlier this year, Mark Zuckerberg had walked people through at a little unveiling of the future of the newsfeed. Walked a bunch of people through, this back in March, I think, what the newsfeed was going to look like. There were going to be bigger pictures and you know, the newsfeed was just kind of going to get retooled. It was going to look a little bit different and be more visual, much more emphasis on, yes, photos and videos and that sort of thing to make your newsfeed come alive. And that new design had been rolled out to a small amount of users. But the idea was that all users were going to get this new design before the end of the year. And a Facebook spokesperson has now said that the company is still testing this redesign, still taking feedback from users, and wouldn't actually comment on whether or not the redesign has officially stalled, which is a little bit odd because you figure if Zuckerberg, I mean, he's the Facebook guy, if he's walking us through some of the new changes and how great they are back in March, that's the point where you figure, oh, okay, Facebook has done a lot of internal testing and now they're ready to let everybody know what it's going to look like. Well, that was, 9 months ago now. What do you think happened?
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting in this article where they talk about the new look, you know, including things like larger images. Doesn't seem like there are any massive changes, but I'm not sure. I just think this is a crucial time for Facebook. And if they need to take their time, maybe that's a good thing, because at the end of the day, they face so much competition. I mean, it is a situation right now where there are a lot of players in the market. And I think, you know, one wrong move as far as the design, and you can just imagine how people are just willing to go elsewhere because there are so many other options. So I think they, as much as I think it's strange, I think taking their time is probably a good idea and not rushing it, because historically, Sarah, they have really rushed things with Facebook all the time with changes. You know, they do what Twitter just did. They'll make a tweak to how the service works, and then they'll take it back and they'll revert to the way it used to be. Mm-hmm. So if they need to slow down a bit, maybe it will be a positive thing for them.
Yeah, especially, you know, there was news. Did we talk about this last week, or did it happen since we were last on the show that Facebook wants to tweak its algorithm so they put more emphasis on quality news stories? Yeah, we did talk about that, didn't we?
We did talk about this, yeah.
And so that, I think that plays into this too. I mean, if if the new design all of a sudden was supposed to make a lot of those kinds of shared articles and stories more front and center, and Facebook has since decided, you know what, all this kind of viral stuff is contributing to people not taking Facebook seriously or spending less time on Facebook because they don't feel like there's quality stuff being shared, well, that affects the design as well.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I still wonder when they're talking about determining what quality stories are, how they can effectively do that. I mean, it just seems so strange to me because I imagine for me, one of the reasons I'm on Facebook is really just to keep in touch with my family, you know, cousins, what they're doing. And I don't know if any of the posts are really, hopefully none of them are listening, but if the quality is really that high, you know, if you were to run an analysis and see that my cousin maybe just posted about getting married, if that really is that exciting, right? So, but to me, it's relevant. So it's a tough one with them. I mean, I hate to beat up on Facebook. I feel like we kind of do it on a regular basis, but I think, you know, there's less and less reason for me to go there regularly, except to find out what those people who are really close to me maybe are doing, those people who aren't on Twitter yet.
Yeah, I'm looking at my Facebook feed, and I was really, this morning I was like, ugh, you know, the quality really does need to get better. Of course, now there's nothing too horrible that I'm looking at. Yeah, I'm just kind of looking through my newsfeed. But yeah, it is a place where you get a cornucopia of articles that are being shared. I know that they're being shared on Twitter. Somehow it's easier for me to not click away, and I end up clicking on a lot of articles from Facebook. Maybe it's that thumbnail and a few sentence blurb underneath that just works well in Facebook's format. Maybe that's something that Facebook feels like, well, we're emphasizing that too much. I don't know. I look forward to the changes. I mean, Facebook is not my favorite social network, Amber. I know that we kind of do say that, but I do spend a lot of time there. So I want it to be as good an experience as possible, as long as I have that many friends who I really only connect with on Facebook.
Yeah, it's like, for me, it's almost like I check my mailbox every day because the mail comes, but I hate mail. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I check it because I may have to open up a bill, but I hate the whole fact that, you know, I have to do that on a daily basis. And Facebook feels like that to me, like I have to check it, but it's not something that I can say that I overly enjoy necessarily. So I tend to spend more time on Twitter and elsewhere, but, it's one of the biggies. And of course, we'll keep an eye on it.
I missed a book club party the other night that I knew was happening. I had said RSVP'd yes, and then because it was Facebook and I forget about Facebook events, it came and went and I didn't go. Nobody texted me to ask why I wasn't there, but I completely missed it. And then the next day they were sort of like, hey, thank you so-and-so for hosting such a fun book club. And I was like, oh man, Facebook events, strike again. Yeah,
I'm the same way, Sarah. Anytime anyone invites me to an event, if it's on Facebook, I never see it. Literally, I will never, ever see it. So it just doesn't work. I mean, I know sometimes it works for some people, but I don't think it's the best tool for that necessarily.
Especially,
unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of people who invite me to, you know, they're in a band and it's like every Friday there's an event that gets created. So I've turned off email notifications because it's just too much. Some of these events are like, or they'll be like, hey, everybody, let's celebrate Developers Day. But it's like, it's not really an event. It's just, that's just the way that it gets shared on Facebook. So when you don't have notifications and events aren't front and center, they are kind of buried really on Facebook.
Yeah.
It's one of those weird things. But anyway, Facebook redesign doesn't look like it's rolling out to the masses. Probably not in 2013. So we'll have to see how they tweak things and change them for next year. Quick reminder before we move on that we record the Social Hour live on Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. I'm sorry, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. But that's changing very, very soon because right after the first of the year, Amber and I are moving to our new day and time. We're going to be Thursdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. We will immediately be following Tech News Today, and we are thrilled about the changes. So anybody who wants to watch and listen to us live, please do make a note of that on Twit's official calendar at twit.tv. We've got information about The Social Hour new changes, as well as other shows on the network that are changing. But we're excited about it. It's one day earlier. It's a good day for us. And it's fun to start the new year with a little bit of change in our schedules.
A little change. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Never hurt anybody. If you have feedback, by the way, about our time changes or anything we really talk about on the show, lots of different ways you can get a hold of us. But the Social Hour at twit.tv is our voicemail box, our email box that we check all day, every day, on the hour, on the minute. Okay, let's move on to, we'll take a moment to thank our sponsor, SAP, for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. You know, when we were talking earlier about Twitter and keywords and being able to target certain users with effective ads based on the things that they say, somebody in chat had said, yeah, but what if they buy a keyword, you know, the keywords love coffee, but you say something like, I do not love coffee, are you going to be flagged to somebody who should be marketed to about coffee? And Social Media Solutions from SAP is actually one of the tools that is able to weed the differences between someone saying something positive and someone saying something negative with almost the same keywords very effectively using big data. The listening component of Social Media Solutions from SAP knows what you want to know about what people are saying about your brand. You know, or is somebody angry? Is there some sort of an emotional component? Are they just confused? Are they ready to buy your product, but they need, you know, a little bit of a push to get them through the shopping cart experience? You know, do they have a bad experience and you want to reach out and make things better? All of that stuff is happening on Twitter. It's happening on Facebook. It's happening all around the web. People are writing about their personal stories on their blogs, on review sites, in comments. All of that stuff is happening, and it can really contribute to you knowing more about who your customers are, what they want, what they like, and what they're not happy about, so that you can end up being a better social media manager, particularly if you work in the enterprise. You know that it can just be, it's a crazy juggling act, because there are more people out there all the time who have audiences and are spreading the gospel about your product, and you need to know what's going on and how to stay on top of it. The engaging component is how you improve your customer service and support, because you set rules about which person on your team is getting which message. You know, it's not necessarily going to funnel all through one person. If you're a big enough company, you can't do it all on your own. You've got people who have specific jobs, and you can monitor the activity on the social stream and then respond to it, which helps you drive sales, which helps you solve customer problems, keeping them happy. You can respond to customer feedback and let them know that you're listening and impress them. We've all had experiences with companies who don't do that, and you feel like you're just kind of complaining to a big void. When a company gets back to you right away, you always notice. Mm-hmm. It's always appreciated. Somebody tweets a tech support problem, you can route it to the right person without even thinking about it. Whoever's on your team that's responsible for that can go ahead and fix it without there being a whole kind of chain of command and forwarding emails and that sort of thing. Social Media Solutions from SAP gives you more than marketing by improving the customer service and support experience. If it sounds good to you, sounds good to your company, or you know of somebody who works at a company who's sort of drowning in the social scene, go to sap.com/twit and take a guided tour. See for yourself how Social Media Solutions from SAP works and can work for you. sap.com/twit. And thanks to SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. All right, Amber, you mentioned a pretty hot YouTube video earlier in the show. What is this?
This is a great story, coming out of that ad for SAP, because it's a story about how a brand created a video and got a ton of attention online. And the company is WestJet, which is a big airline in Canada, and they created this Christmas miracle video. So we're watching it now for our audio listeners. I'll explain it. So what they did is they went to the airport, and when they were at the airport, they set up this this kiosk, and the kiosk was a place where people could go and they could talk to Santa. So they had people who were waiting at the gate, who were waiting for their flight, who would go in and they would tell Santa exactly what they wanted for the holidays, and Santa would light up on this screen and interact with them. So it wasn't like it was not a real person. Santa was in another room and they were doing all of this live, and kids loved it. So they told Santa, you know, I want a toy. One guy said, I want a TV. And Santa would respond to them. We are showing the video now of a little kid going up after they scan the boarding pass. Santa knows who the kid is and their name, and they're interacting back and forth. So I won't talk through the whole video because it's 5.5 minutes, but the gist of this is all of the people in the who were waiting at the gate mentioned what they wanted to Santa and then kind of went on their way. Well, while this was happening, they were flying to their destination. WestJet had a team on the ground who was going around to all the toy stores and electronics stores and getting all of the gifts that people had asked for. And I don't know if we can fast forward in the video closer to the end, but you see people get off the plane who are literally getting off the plane and coming down the belt are literally all these different gifts with people's names on them. And they're in shock because they had just asked for these, you know, from a random Santa in a screen. And then it all came true as they got to the baggage area.
That's so amazing. That is such a good idea. Gosh, how much money do you think that they spent?
I know.
You know,
I think
did somebody ask for a car?
Someone asked for a big screen TV. That appears to be the largest item. And there are a lot of people on social media talking about how one guy asked that, oh, I need some new socks, you know, not really thinking about it. Of course, he gets new socks. But he's probably wishing at this point he asked for something a little more. But nonetheless, a lot of happy passengers. And, you know, I rarely watch a 5.5 minute video on YouTube, but this is one where you'll watch to the very end.
This is one of those things, yeah, where you say, what a great idea. Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's just such a good marketing play. But at the same time, it's just fun to watch. And the fact that it's WestJet, which is an airline that I don't think I've ever flown.
It's a great airline.
Is
yeah.
It? Yeah. So they do a lot of, I don't know. I mean, you would know more than I would, Amber. It sounds like they've got a pretty good reputation with customers.
They do. Really great customer service reputation and very family friendly. Mm. And they just, you know, people just love WestJet. So this is just adding to the love during the holidays.
Particularly for an airline, because I don't have anything good to say about any airline. I mean, some I like more than others, usually because there's Wi-Fi on flights. But in general, it's sort of you figure like, I'll just hope for the least horrible trip, and that's just the way that it goes in airline travel. The people who got their gifts on WestJet, I mean, are never going to forget that, how amazing that is. But then the rest of us got to get in on it, too. So, I mean, it's probably money extremely well spent. I mean, how would you make people happier than that?
You know, it's funny. And everybody that I know absolutely loved it. And then I did see some comments posted on social media sites where people were saying, oh, that's terrible. You know, it's really saying that Christmas is all about getting presents. And I think at the end of the day, you know, people really just need to relax a little bit. You know, this was an advertising campaign. And quite frankly, I would rather they did something like this that was kind of creative and made people happy, a whole plane load of people happy, than did maybe a TV ad, right?
Yeah.
So I think it was very clever, very creative, and just gets people in the holiday spirit. And I'm sure they're getting a lot of traction out of this. Like I mentioned off the top of the show, more than 20 million people or around 20 million people so far have watched the video on YouTube.
That's crazy. I mean, this is a fairly new video. And to those who say Christmas is all about getting gifts, it's like, listen, I don't have any kids, but I know that for many parents, that is what Christmas is about. And a lot of, you know, it's like, that's a big component. And it'd be kind of nice to be getting a little gift as you're waiting for your luggage to come out. Also, there were a couple people who asked for flights home for the holidays, which they received as gifts. And so,
oh, yeah, that's right.
There you go. It's all about family as well. WestJet understands.
Cute.
Good
Nicely
work,
done.
WestJet. If only that would happen on my next flight.
Hint, hint, hint,
hint. Hint, hint, Virgin America.
Hello.
Make it rain. Okay, so what's our social tip of the week, Amber?
All right. I am a big Google user, as I know you are. I use Gmail, lots of other tools, and Google now has this website where you can go to and you can get Google tips for all of the different products that you may use from Google. And it's kind of interesting. They're like little cards almost. When you click on the link to go to Google Tips, you'll see you can search at home, at the office, and you can search by product. So if you want to search by product, for example, and go into something like Gmail, you can get Gmail tips on these little cards. Things like you send that family video over email without worrying about how big it is, and then it will get you all the information you need to figure out how to send files up to 10 gigs. So it's basically little simple little tips that are formatted in a way that just make it easier to be able to flip through them.
I love this. I think, you know, even though I feel like we study Google products all the time, I'm pretty up to speed on everything that Google releases, and there are quite a few of them. This is not only a great reminder, just like, oh yeah, I can do that in Gmail, or I can link those two accounts together. But hey, 'tis the season to like be the family hero that helps your family or your friends or whoever kind of know a little bit more about the tools that they have as well. And I think that this is a really nice place to direct people to, because you can learn a lot about stuff that's, you know, it's not hard to implement. It just might have been a feature that for whatever reason you weren't using, and really makes your life easier.
Yeah, it's just really simple stuff. Okay, Sarah, here's a way to describe how great WestJet is at social media. We just got a tweet from them. Superb. Wow. Thanks for the heads up, because someone had tweeted out we were talking about it on the show.
Wow, there you go. Was like, yeah, that was...
A minute later.
Yeah, 1 minute later. Thank you, WestJet. You are perfect. You're perfect in every way, apparently. You are on top of the... Are you using SAP? That's awesome.
Too funny. So yeah, the Google tips are very cool. And I think it's one of those things where, just simple little things, if you want to just be almost like a Google power user, this gives you all that information that you would need at your fingertips. So very, very handy.
Google tips website, google.com/get/Google tips. But we will have the link in our show notes as well. A lot of very handy tricks in there. Some of them you already know about, others... I was clicking around earlier, and I had forgotten that Google has a nice to-do list that's built right into Gmail. I knew it was there, but I hadn't thought about it in a while, and I'm always looking for the best place to jot down ideas instead of emailing them to myself. So that's just one of the many things that it's just supposed to enhance, you know, your everyday life. Be quiet, phone. And it does. And this is a really good sort of one-stop shop for it. All right, so let's move on to our spotlight now. This is actually an app that is appropriately named Leo. It had nothing to do with Leo Laporte. I don't know. Maybe they like Leo Laporte, so they decided to call it Leo. But this app has been getting a lot of attention this week because people are calling it, oh, it's the next Snapchat, because it's all about ephemeral messaging, meaning messages that aren't supposed to be saved forever. They're supposed to be seen, shared, and then they go away. Kind of like actual communication, vocal communication. So I'm actually in a little group. I'll make sure that you can see my phone. That's me. I'm in a little group here where we've been talking back and forth with each other. Now, they all happen to be ladies in this particular group. I don't really know why, but there's nothing really to see in the group besides the members, because all of the information that we've shared with each other thus far has been seen and gone away. So let's say... I don't want to add to the people in the group. Let's say I want to take a little video of myself and I want to send it to the people in the group and tell them, hi, I'm on the Social Hour right now reviewing Leo. Whee! Okay. I'm on the Social Hour right now reviewing Leo. Okay. Hi, ladies. And then you can see that they all have... You know, it was a 5-second video or so, and it goes whoop, and that's the end of that. Now, what's kind of cool about it is that's a video that I've decided to share that's simply as long as my recording session was. Although, I could also add a photo from my photo library. I could also just add a little, hi via text. Gosh, they're really going to hate my my updates. They're not good. Post. All right, they'll see that as well for another 5 seconds. So the idea is like, okay, Snapchat got us somewhat interested in the idea of photos and videos not lasting forever. But it's not really a great way to have like a text conversation. You could scribble over a photo or you can write text in Snapchat. But Leo is designed to be a little bit more of a, it's almost a little bit more of like a more grown-up version of that. Of course, the stuff that I'm sending is pretty silly, but it's video, it's photo, it's text, and it goes away. So there's just not a lot of pressure. If you want to share something, you share it.
How long does it last, Sarah? Is it 5 seconds?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the video, obviously, it depends on how long the video is that you that you have. But yes, it's a five second thing. It's gone. It's there and it's gone again.
So it looks slick, though. It looks like a really nice design. I know it looks like it's available for iPhone and Android devices.
Let me double check with that. I want to make sure. I want to make sure that that's right. Yes. It's available on Google Play and the App Store, so that's good. And I've only played around with it on iPhone, and you know, this is one of those things, Amber, where I love the idea of temporary messages, stuff that doesn't, you know, add to my smartphone hard drive or make me feel like I have to be an artist or that sort of thing. And I just wonder, okay, well, Snapchat is wildly popular, so people like the concept. How many people are going to end up using Leo, even if it's a little bit more of a, it's maybe possibly a better utility for communication? How do you convince people to sign up? There are quite a few of my sort of tech friends that are already using Leo, but what about everybody else?
It's hard. You know, you almost wonder what that tipping point is with certain apps and tools out there like Snapchat. You know, what happened to make it become popular? Obviously, teens kind of latched onto it, and that's a huge win every time. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. I mean, it just seems so hard these days to get a lot of people using it, right? It just, there's so much competition, especially in the messaging space. I mean, it's very crowded right now. And I don't know. It seems like it's one of those things that it's like almost luck, right? if you end up doing well.
Yeah, right. I mean, when Snapchat first came on the scene, and that wasn't that long ago, I mean, I remember thinking, okay, I understand the concept, but I'm really not the target audience for this. I don't see this being of any use to me. And now, it's not even so much that I'm sharing so much on Snapchat, but I've got a group of friends where, yeah, there's a friend of mine who he's really good about every few hours. I don't think that the Snapchats are coming specifically to me. I don't think so. I think it's probably a group of people. But he has like these really cool updates, and he's always in cool places, and he's traveling a lot, and it's wonderful. And the videos don't have to be emailed to me or anything like that. I see them and I go, oh, look at Tyson. And then that's the end of it. So I like the idea of this. It'll be interesting to see how many, what kind of a user base Leo does have, or can build up based on Snapchat's popularity.
Well, Wayne on Twitter says that the key is to make parents hate it and then kids will love it. So maybe that worked for Snapchat. We'll see if it works for other services.
Right. There's got to be something in there with the name. I'm trying to come up with something really, really funny, but have to be careful.
Yes. Yeah. It's a tough one.
Get Leo app, by the way, is the site to go to if you want to know a little bit more about that. But that's our spotlight of the week. We also got an email from Chris who said he was mentioning, because a couple episodes ago, I had said Twitter favoriting is kind of weird to me because I favorite stuff that I want to bookmark. And sometimes that would be, you know, an interesting article that I, you know, maybe it mentions an iPhone app and I think, oh, I have to remember. And I favorite it and then I'll go back through my favorites and then I'll unfavorite things that I've favorited in the past because I'm done with them and they don't need to be in that list anymore. And Chris says, you know, it occurred to me that Sarah's going through a lot of unnecessary bother every time she goes back and unfavorites old tweets. Plus, the recipients of all this favoriting and unfavoriting must end up a little confused as to whether Sarah likes their tweets or not. He says, why not just use an IFTTT recipe? That's if this, then that, which we've talked about on the show in the past. It's sort of a way to link services together. He says, why not use a recipe to automate some of the stuff and make your life easier? In fact, I've created a few recipes for you guys and anybody else who'd like to use them. They can be triggered every time a tweet is favorited. So one will save your favorited tweet to Instapaper, or one will save it to Evernote, or one will append it to a text file in Dropbox. He says, IFTTT is one of those things like Drafts or Launch Center Pro. Those are both other apps that are good at getting things done. He says, it really becomes indispensable once you realize how much it can do. Then he says, I love the show, but we need more cats. And so, thank you, Chris. You're a wonderful emailer.
You're
helpful. You say nice things about us, and you mention cats. You're great. Amber, I think this is a great idea because, my main concern with tweet favorites is I've got stuff that's like utility favoriting plus stuff that's like Amber made a joke that was awesome, or I like that picture that Amber shared. I'll go ahead and favorite that to give her a little, a little internet heart type thing. And they don't really belong in the same category. So if I just favorite things as much as I want and I know that there's a backup somewhere else, I don't have to worry about my favorited tweet list so much in Twitter itself.
I love it. You know what? I feel like I don't use if this then that enough, but I love the idea of all of this just to stay organized, and it makes so much sense. And I find so much great content on Twitter that even just being able to favorite and then send it somewhere, like he mentions, like Evernote, just to keep track of it is such a fabulous idea. So Chris, thank you so much.
Yes, and we will put those links in our show notes as well, Chris's recipes, so you can utilize them if you like. I certainly will. I think between Instapaper, Evernote, and Dropbox, Amber, I'm such a Dropbox fanatic these days. That's probably where I would choose to have my tweet favorites sent to, but Evernote would work really well too.
Yeah, Evernote would work great. Yeah. It's a great idea. And then more cats. So we'll work on that. I mean, we usually do have some type of cat social media story, but this week, not so much. So maybe next time.
Unfortunately, not so much. Although we do love hearing your ideas. You want more cats? We want to hear about it. If you want fewer cats, please don't email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv.
Do not talk to us if you want
fewer cats. Don't even. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. That's 2626, SOCIAL. And, ooh, there's a kitty. What in the heck? That's a funny little kitty. You've got short little legs. Brian, where'd this come from? Corgi Kitty. If you have videos like Corgi Kitty, please send them along. Oh, my goodness. Oh, hey, buddy. All right. Eyes on the prize, Sarah. What are you doing? Think about what you're doing. If you want to record a video as well for us that is a Corgi Kitty or something equally awesome, you can always send that, upload it somewhere, and then send the link to the video to thesocialhour@twit.tv. And, of course, if you ever miss a show, you'd like to keep up on our back catalog. You know, last week we had Gary Vaynerchuk. He was a wonderful guest. I mean, so high energy and such great advice for anybody who really wants to crush it socially. That was episode 139. You can go to twit.tv/TSH and catch up on anything we've talked about in the past. We've got all of our show notes, links that you want to revisit. Everything's there, as well as subscription links as well, to add us to your favorite podcast app and be able to listen and watch on the go, on demand, whenever it's convenient for you, whenever you enjoy spending a little time with your two favorite social gals of tech. Made that up,
yeah,
but why not?
And you should definitely go and watch the last episode because Gary was amazing. I mean, I think we've interviewed him before, Sarah, but I felt like last week he was just, definitely lots of really helpful tips. And actually, hopefully during your next ad, we could recommend one of his books.
I think so. In fact, this is probably a good time to thank Audible.com for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. We love Audible, not only because it's a great service, but because they have a great selection. I mean, their audiobook collection is over 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of genres, literature and nonfiction, and there's really something for everybody depending on the kind of stuff that you like to read. I certainly would like to read more than I do. I find that it just kind of, the weeks go by and I'm not going to sit down and read a novel, but I can certainly listen to an audiobook in my car. It's a great way to pass the time in my commute, or on one of my long walks, or when I'm maybe making something in the kitchen. I'm kind of going to be stuck for a while, and it's like, I just want to listen to somebody kind of reading me a story. It's a great way to be able to absorb a variety of books. And yeah, Amber, as you mentioned, if you search for Gary Vaynerchuk on Audible, you've got all sorts of options. Gary is a very dynamic speaker. And, you know, Gary narrating his own book is almost probably, it's probably twice as effective as actually reading it.
Not only how big my business is or how much money I've made. And thanks to following these three rules, I am 100% happy. Don't believe me? Think it's not possible? I promise you it is.
Ooh. Yeah,
if you don't know what
that's good. Well, yeah, because I mean, Gary is—I mean, he's a fantastic speaker. He really has a gift, and he has a lot of great advice, and he's been in social and marketing for years. Amber, I know that you've been familiar with not just his persona but his books as well.
Yeah, no, I've been a fan of his for a really long time, and watching him on stage is always so much fun. He's got so much energy, and I just, you know, I thought having him on the show last week, too, I just felt like he's evolved, too, right? I mean, I think he used to be a little more motivational in some ways, but I love that his most recent book is more practical, and I have read some of the books that are available on Audible, and you know what? I think after listening to a book of Gary Vee on Audible for I don't know how many hours, I would be pumped up to do anything, because that guy can motivate like no one else I know.
He really can. Yeah. And I think that that's a good point that you make. It's motivational speaking is very important. And hey, we all need a kick in the pants every once in a while. But practical tips, especially with all of the options that we have as far as, okay, how can I use these social tools in order to reach the people that I'm trying to reach, to grow my audience? A lot of like, well, how about doing this specifically? Maybe you've never thought about that. It really goes a long way. Rather than, you know, it's sort of the higher level stuff. And I know that that Gary's most recent book addresses a lot of that. And Audible is a great way to be able to absorb a lot of his great tips as well. So you can download one of Gary's audiobooks. By the way, I haven't even told you the best part. You can download an audiobook for free and try out Audible right now. You go to audiblepodcast.com/social hour. So audiblepodcast.com/social hour. You just go ahead and sign up. It's completely free. If at the end of your trial of Audible, you decide not to go ahead, you still get to keep that audiobook. So it's like you just get a free book of your choice. And again, there are so many downloadable titles. It's, you can go nuts. Just find the one that you like the best. I think you'll really like the whole audiobook thing. It's a lot of fun. We here at TWiT love Audible. And again, try it out. See if it works for you. It's a great service. A lot of great books, and it works like a charm. You can listen on a variety of devices. Audible makes it as easy as possible. Again, audiblepodcast.com/social hour. Get that free book, and thanks to Audible for sponsoring our show. All right, Amber, it's Rad or Fad time. How did we get to the end of the show so quickly?
Okay, Sarah, I don't know. Do you like popcorn?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. It's like one of my favorite things in the world.
Yeah, that's the only reason I go to movies half the time, is because I want a big old popcorn.
It's so good. Okay, so you might be familiar with a company called Pop Secret, and you may or may not know that they have a mobile game, and you might not know that the mobile game, while you're playing it, it could smell like popcorn if you try out this new little attachment that they have that is available for the iPhone and iPod Touch. This is when you're playing the game Poptopia, and when you swipe butter inside the game, for example, you will actually smell butter because of a spritz of popcorn scent that they will send out to you. This is an article on AdAge.com, and we've seen this before. It's not the first time we've seen scents come out of iPhones. We have talked about this, I believe, once or twice before. This one is connected to a game, so that makes it somewhat different versus connected to a text. And I don't know, though. I mean, I love popcorn. I'm not sure I love this.
I'm always a little bit weirded out by smelling things digitally.
Really?
Yes. I don't even like the, why do you see all these close-ups of people's noses?
I don't,
the whole thing is just a little bit like, what? The pop dongle. I mean, Pop Secret isn't even my favorite. I don't know. Okay, so the type of popcorn aside, do I like the idea of this? I don't know. I mean, it's pretty creative. I think I'm down with the real thing.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I want a bag of popcorn in front of me. I don't know if I want.
I think this is kind of, yeah. I think it's a fad because, like I said, we've seen this before. So it seems like it's something that people keep trying to replicate and trying to figure out a way to make this work. Obviously, this is part of a marketing plan. So it's maybe just supposed to be fun as well and get attention. So people like us will talk about it. But I don't know. I think I'm over the rad with this. I think it is definitely kind of a fad. And I don't know if I, like you, I really want to smell stuff coming out of my phone.
No.
It seems weird.
Not really. It's,
what if it sprayed you in the eyes or something? Thing.
Yeah. Like, what is the smell made of? And there's so many scratch and sniff stickers that don't really smell that much like what they're supposed to smell like. I mean, not that I'm like doing a lot of scratch and sniffing these days, but I have over the years enjoyed a sticker that's supposed to smell like root beer, you know, and you smell it and you're like,
that doesn't smell like root beer.
Right. It smells like a weird synthetic version of it. What are you doing, Brian? My God.
Brian. Okay, for our audio listeners, Brian has just put Sarah's nose, inserted it.
My poor, awful, misshapen nose. Thank you. Thank you, Brian. That's awesome.
I did not.
Very nice. But I don't know, Amber. I don't think I want a pop dongle.
I don't want a pop dongle. I'm with you. I'm going to go for the real thing.
Yeah.
So we're over the smelly smartphones.
Yeah, scratch and sniff dongles for phones. That's a fad.
Yeah, and you know what? There's so many germs on our phones anyway. Like, just the last thing we need is more stuff spraying out of them. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
Exactly. Ugh, God. Yeah, it's, where's your dongle been, you know? It's going to be the new question. Sorry, Pop Secret, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to pass.
But send us popcorn.
yeah. Real popcorn is just great. Kettle corn.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
All right. Well, that does it for this edition of The Social Hour. Thanks, everybody, for hanging out with us. Those who watch and listen to us live, as well as those who are watching or listening after the fact at your leisure, over the weekend, perhaps. Or, you know, it would kind of be fun to know. Sometimes we get feedback like this, Amber, and people tell us, "Oh, this is why I like your show, or this is when I listen to your show, or watch your show," and remind us how you consume our show. It'd just be kind of nice for us to know, really, what you like about it, and maybe what your favorite part of the show is, and what you'd like us to talk about more. All of that stuff would help us because, hey, you know, we're social; it's a community here. We want to talk about the stuff that everybody wants to hear about. Well, Amber, what's coming up for you in the next week? You're still going to be up in snowy Toronto before you fly south for the winter.
Yeah, I will be in Florida next week, so I'll be doing the show from there next Friday, and that's kind of all I'm looking forward to right now, Sarah. I definitely like warm weather, so now there are snowflakes coming down the screen for our audio listeners. It never ends. You really need to download the video version of the show. But snow is okay, but I'm heading south, Sarah. It's all going to be good.
All right. Well, over the next week, it's pretty quiet around these parts. But just a reminder for those of you who are in the snowy Christmas spirit and want to watch us live, we will be doing two back-to-back social hours next Friday. In fact, this is significant because, well, no, the following... We'll be doing two shows next Friday back-to-back, so one at 1 p.m. Pacific and then another immediately after at 2 p.m. Pacific because we will be off for the Christmas holiday on December 27th, which is a Friday, but we will be back on the 3rd. Our first show that airs on Thursday is technically the second week of January. This might all be too much information. Definitely check the Twit calendar, but I just wanted to give you a heads up that you get two for one next Friday. So if you can join us on Friday afternoon, there'll just be a lot of me and Amber.
And I think the second show, we're going to do the best of social media for 2013. So
exactly.
Definitely tune into that one.
Absolutely.
Or send us your stuff too.
Yes. Send us submissions. Tell us what was the best of 2013 and we'll add it to the mix. All right. Thanks for watching and listening, everybody. We'll see you next week. Until then, I will remain Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and we'll see you soon.